a Ferguson freelance journalist based in Belfast.
Well, in England, just two areas were moved down the tier system yesterday following a review of infection rates across England. It means 38 million people will be living under the toughest tier three measures from midnight. Dr. Kit Yates is co-director of the Centre for Mathematical Biology at the University of Bath and a member of the Independent Sage Group and author of The Maths of Life and Death. Good morning, Kit. You can see if you're sitting in Manchester having watched London in tier two while you were in tier three and then which way the infection rates went, that this feels a little unfair.
Morning. Yeah, I can understand that. Manchester has seen drops largely, although that's not consistent across the whole of Greater Manchester. There are some regions with higher rates. Certainly London has seen huge rises in tier two. Yeah, I've been looking at the numbers and thinking about what's happening in each of the different tiers, and actually almost all of the local authorities that are in tier two, or at least were in tier two until yesterday, have seen rises. So tier two just really doesn't seem to be enough to keep on top of infections, and actually even tier three seems to be slightly more effective, but actually there are still more regions in tier three with rises than falls. So it's a really, really worrying picture across the whole country.
And obviously it was going up during the last week of lockdown in London, you know, when we were in the most extreme measures. So what does the maths now say about where infections are likely to go after Christmas?
Well, cases are rising already in almost every region except possibly Yorkshire and Humber, and test positivity rates are going up too. So it means that this isn't just an effect of increased testing. This genuinely is the disease spreading rapidly again. Again, looking down further into the local authority level, almost every local authority has seen a rise. Combine that with the fact that we're going to have this five-day mixing over Christmas, and actually we're going to have huge rises. It's potentially going to be disastrous come January.
It's not a surprise, though, is it? This is all entirely predictable. So, you know, late announcements, such as we're getting on schools and measures changing there, how excusable is that?
I think there's lots of things that could have been foreseen. When you ease the lockdown restrictions, then inevitably things start to rise. On schools, we at Independent Sage have been saying the best thing to do would be to make schools safer, so to get better ventilation, to potentially allow a winter heating budget, to allow schools to have their windows open but also the heating on so our kids aren't freezing cold in there, getting more space to spread the kids out, smaller bubbles, making sure that we have stricter bubbles so that if there is one person in the class which has COVID, then all that bubble gets isolated, but potentially trying to make the bubble stricter so it isn't a whole year group in secondary school, so it isn't 120 or 200 pupils that have to get sent home. It's more like 30. So there's lots of things that could be done, and you know, this Christmas period is potentially a time to do it, but I'm worried that we won't see that being done.
Now, has the work also been done on how long you need these restrictions in place? I mean, if Northern Ireland is looking at 6 weeks, you know, nationally we had almost a month. Wales tried 2 weeks, and that didn't quite do the trick. So if we are looking at further restrictions in the new year, how long do they need to be in place?
It depends what you want to achieve from these restrictions, and it depends how wisely you use your time in between. Obviously, when you start to ease restrictions, if you haven't done anything to try and change the spread of the disease in the meantime, then cases are just going to rise. So trying to do things like making schools safe, because we know there's a lot of transmission in schools, trying to make sure that test, trace and isolate is as good as it can possibly be, that so we can isolate people who are potentially infectious from spreading the disease. These are the things we need to be doing if we do have tighter restrictions after Christmas, so that there's no single answer to say, you know, this long will get us down to this many cases and then that will be okay, because obviously we know that this disease will start to spread when you ease restrictions. The vaccine is great news, and that's on the horizon. It's being delivered now, but actually that's quite a slow process, and it's not going to make a huge impact on the spread until maybe Easter time. So we're in this for the long haul still.
Now, as you know, that there is a lot of debate about the accuracy of predictions. I'm intrigued by the name of your centre, the Centre for Mathematical Biology at Bath.
Yeah.
How accurate have the models been when it comes to predicting how cases and deaths are going to go?
So I think it's probably important to say that doing real-time modelling in a pandemic is incredibly difficult, especially when data sources are inconsistent, particularly at the start of the pandemic. I think there have been some predictions which have been better than others, but actually generally the predictions have been saying, if you don't do anything, we're going to be in a particularly bad state, and you don't really need a complicated mathematical model to do that. And so I think there's been a lot of talk about potentially models being scaremongering, but actually cases are rising, cases will continue to rise unless we take slightly stricter measures. And like I say, you don't need hugely complicated mathematical models to tell you that.
Dr. Kit Gates, thank you very much indeed. It's 7:46. This is-